Hi, I'm Linda Brady.
And I'm Michael Brady.
Together, we are Partners for Karmic Freedom. Welcome to our podcast, The Age of Aquarius, New Rules for a New Age. This is the last of the podcasts on the Aquarian philosophy and the Aquarian foundations. And as we said last week, we're going to be talking today about energetic laws and their effect on our life every day. There's a man named David Spangler who wrote a book called Revelation, The Birth of a New Age. And I was blessed to find it many, many years ago. In it, he outlines seven crucial energies, philosophies, if you will, that can enhance our spiritual energy so we can use it more effectively and we can create more positive energy. He also mentions laws which can decrease our energy and decrease that positive creative flow. So we're going to be talking about that today. So Michael, why don't you go ahead and read the first energetic law?
I will do that, Linda. Energy is limitless. It is neither positive or negative. The person determines the effect. There is an abundance of energy at all times.
That seems so simple, doesn't it, when you read it like that?
Pretty simplistic.
Pretty simplistic. Except, I don't think we all believe that. I don't think everybody believes that there's always enough energy. I think we're raised in scarcity, not necessarily in expansion. So being able to buy and understand that there's all the energy in the world that we need at any given moment, it goes back to us, doesn't it?
Sure. And the Age of Pisces posited that there is indeed good energy
and positive
energy.
And negative.
There is,
yes,
good and evil. So evil is negative energy and good is positive energy.
Right.
And this is saying that energy is neutral, and that it depends on the intention of the person who uses it.
Absolutely. And I think intention across the board, the most important thing.
So if you believe that there is good and bad energy inherently, then you are severely restricting the amount of energy you can tap, assuming that you're anti-evil. Anti-evil, that's a good one. And you only have available to you half of the energy.
Right.
That you could be using,
right,
as opposed to that in that framework.
Right. So energy is limitless, gives us a lot of room to use. We have a lot of possibilities here. And if we have good intentions, and almost everybody that I know does, we're creating positive energy, even if we have negative intention. You know, the bottom line is energy is energy is energy is energy. We have to decide. We decide,
right,
what's positive, right, or negative,
right,
not some outside force.
That's correct.
Okay, fine.
I agree, absolutely.
Okay.
Love and truth. Loving yourself is essential to creating energy. Being in truth with ourselves and not living in our illusions creates energy.
Oh, my God. We could spend at least 15 hours talking about this one.
I've spent my whole life talking about this.
Right. Well, first of all, I don't know if we're ever taught that we need to love ourselves first. I think that goes against the Pisces doctrine of other people's needs
everybody
are more important
else,
than me.
Everybody else first and me last.
And I need, right, and I need to love everybody else but not me.
And if I suffer and die at the end of my life, that's how I use my energy up, then I'm promised that I'll go to heaven.
Right. Okay. All right. So number one, that is a challenge. And I've had people say, well, that's, of course I love myself. And then when they really start looking at that, they realize they really don't. Their self-value, their self-worth, their self-esteem is dependent on somebody else's opinion of them. So this whole idea of loving yourself as part of ways to create real positive energy is critical. The other thing, being in truth. You know, I don't know how many of you guys out there are having throat problems or have had throat problems. Well, the throat chakra is a dead giveaway when we're not telling ourselves the truth. We can get stuck. We can have sore throat. We can go like that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, that whole idea of there's something that we are not speaking in truth with ourselves.
I've got a great story with that. About 27 years ago, I was working in a mental health clinic part-time. And in a slack period when I just started, the head of the drug and alcohol side of the unit came over and hung out with me in the mental health side of the unit, which was one side of the hallway versus the other. and plopped down on my couch, because we'd only crossed paths once and said, "Hi, my name is," kind of thing, just to spend some time with each other. And she sat down on the couch with this horrible, horrible head cold. I mean, it's, you know, the one that sounds like, "I can't talk, I can't eat," kind of thing.
Right.
Her voice was that screwed up. And I said, "Boy, that sounds like a nasty cold." And she said, "Well, flu or cold, I don't know, blah, blah, blah." She said, "But I've had it for 6 weeks. You wouldn't believe it." She said, "It started in my chest," and she touched her chest. And she said, "And it lasted like 2 weeks. And then I took antibiotics. I went to the doctor and prescribed antibiotics. And it went to my throat," and she touched her throat. And she said, "And I took the whole course of antibiotics, and now it's in my head," and she touched her head. And I sat there and thought, heart chakra, throat chakra, third eye chakra. So I thought, oh. So I had just learned about how the chakras work then. And I said, "I have an interesting game to play. You want to try?" And she bit and said, "Okay," not knowing a clue about what I meant. And I said, "Well, your cold seems to reflect that 6 weeks or so ago, something happened that had to do with either unresolved grief, a broken heart, and something about a relationship." And she said, "How did you do that?" And I said, "What?" And she said, "Well, now that you talk about it, 6.5 weeks ago, my ex-husband contacted me out of the blue from a nasty divorce that happened 10 years ago, yada, 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 yada." And I said, "Oh, okay, well, it sounds like your cold is an expression of this based on how the chakras work. There was a heart issue that you needed to readdress, unresolved grief, anger, grief, I'm not sure which yet, but you didn't want to deal with it consciously. But as you said, it was a nasty divorce that was over 10 years ago. Put it behind me. So it moved up to your throat, which has to do with inner conscience, speaking the truth to ourselves, speaking the truth to other people, inside or outside. So it tried to get you to talk the truth to yourself, that there was something unresolved about your divorce of 10 years ago that you still hadn't dealt with emotionally." And I said, "But you didn't want to hear that either." "So it moved up to your third eye recently," which is a head cold, okay? And the third eye is about clairvoyance, clear seeing, insight. "So now it's trying to get you to see something about that issue." And she said, "That's amazing, because 10 years ago it was a nasty divorce, and I thought, and it was very contentious, and I had a lot of anger at this man, and I thought I was done with all that." She said, "But you know, it came right back up again when he recontacted me." And I said, "Uh-huh." So then stuff started to happen in the health clinic, and we had to break away. It was a week before I saw her again. Next week I saw her. She cruises into my office. She slops down on the couch, and she's grinning from ear to ear. And I go, "What?" And she said, "You're not going to believe this." I said, "What?" "The day after we talked last week, the next morning I was completely well. My cold was completely gone." And I went, isn't that interesting? So maybe the stuff we talked about had something to do with the biological process you were going through. What do you think? And she said, "I got to really think about this, because I've never entertained these ideas before."
Right. And the being in truth, pardon me, also has an awful lot to do with how we live our lives in illusion across the board. And people say, "Well, I don't have any illusions. You know, I understand what's going on. I'm a reality-based, practical kind of person." But it's not until they start learning about their Neptune placements in their chart, or their tricksters, or their inner child, a lot of other things that are going on that create a diversity of non-reality or old belief systems or contaminated belief systems.
Oh, yes.
You know, all of that, and not allowing ourselves to see and understand the truth really does create a negative view of positive energy.
Yes. So. Well, positive energy ordinarily would be held as positive love, right? Mm-hmm. The soft, warm, fuzzy feeling about ourselves and everybody else. But that's not the whole truth. Positive energy is also all of our emotions. Glad, right. Mad. Glad covers love, okay? Glad, mad, sad, scared, ashamed. Now, not guilty. That's over here on the side, because that's a contamination of shame. But mad, sad, scared, ashamed, okay? Those are also positive emotions if they are an immediate reaction to our environment, to the present. If somebody walks up and smacks you in the face out of the blue, and you're not cornered, you'll be frightened. That's guaranteed. It's built in. because it helped us run away when we were threatened in life. And if you're cornered, it'll make you feel angry, which will help you be strong and fight and survive in that instance of attack. Now, we don't live in that kind of immediate biological danger on a daily basis, but for a 1.5 million years we have as hunters and gatherers most of the time. So we're built to react emotionally to what happens in our face, in the environment, in the here and now all the time. Those emotions are only meant to be short-lived. They only last a minute, 5 minutes, maybe at the longest a half an hour, because you're either dead or you've survived something, whether half an hour most of the time in life. And then the next part is thinking about the future. The other contaminated kind of emotion we can have is to speculate about what's going to happen in the future, which isn't real yet, but whatever we think about generates our emotion. So we have contaminated emotion from the past. We've got this clean, clear emotional response in the present, and we've got this contaminated kind of emotion in the future. And it's the uncontaminated emotion that we mean by positive energy here. If we were in touch with our emotions just in the here and now in response to what was going on and not playing with the past and the future and contaminating our emotions, all of our emotions that I've named would be part of the positive.
That's why they say the present is our gift, right?
Yes, the present. Right. And in fact, I just got to this in some of the reading I've been doing in the past year and some of the meditations I've been doing. And that is that actually space and time is somewhat of an illusion, okay? The fact is that your beingness, when you come into an incarnation, you come into awareness, existence in life on the material plane, is present, is here and now. And it's present here and now in your body, okay? And you never really move from being present in your body. So in fact, you never really move anywhere while you're here on the earth plane. The only place you can really live and exist is here and now. And the entire universe, including your body and your body within the universe, is moving in relation to everything else in matter. But we're not matter, we're spirit. So, in fact, the essence of us is always here and now and always in the presence and actually never goes anywhere.
I have a feeling people are going to have to listen to that about 15 times, Michael, before they get that.
It's a brain teaser, but I've been stewing on things like this.
Yes, we know how you stew. Okay. All right, so let's move on.
Okay. The law of karma. Energy flows from a center and must return to that center to complete. Energy put out will come back. This is the basic law of karma.
Yeah, we all know that. I mean, we know what we've sown, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, there's nothing more to be said about that except that he put a fine point on it, you know, that the energy has to return to a source, whatever that source may be. Now, whether it's an in-life source or a next-life source,
sure,
or any way that works, putting what we put out, we will receive.
And this is the karmic rule of justice in the universe, because let's just play with that for a second. If you put out negative energy, we might call that evil in the Christian era, then this is saying that if you put out energy, you do actions with intentions that we consider negative or evil, that it's going to come back in your face, that it's mm-hmm. going to come back at you from outside. So what you put out comes back at you.
Because you're the source.
Yes. Ultimately, now that may not be immediate. That could be over hours, days, weeks, months, years, or a lifetime.
Or lifetimes.
Ultimately, mm-hmm. when that energy does return, it's in your face. That's called learning, because if you're on receiving end of negative energy, you probably aren't enjoying yourself and don't like it, if I look for neutral commentary there.
Right.
And everybody's built that way. So everybody, eventually, from the negative energy they put out, will learn from their own experience on the receiving end. It doesn't pay to do that.
Right. And the way that we do that, it's through soul contracts.
Oh, yeah.
That's how it happened. You know, that if I hurt you, sooner or later,
right,
you're going to hurt me. It's right. A tit for tat, spiritual tit for tat.
In each incarnation, if we're unaware of ourselves, now you and I are aware of ourselves in this incarnation, but probably I'd say 6 out of 10 times we come through, where we live and die and are completely unaware of ourselves. We're just, I am who I am, and I'm doing what I'm doing while I'm here, kind of thing.
Right.
So self-aware lifetimes are more unusual than common. And in those common lifetimes, we're not aware of ourselves. Tit for tat is the only way that we can make progress. Now, it's very snail-pacey progress, because you only get to make one little contract correction, and it usually costs you or the other person their life, historically speaking.
Right.
But it's still progress. So tit for tat would be one lifetime to the next, completing a lesson with that person who's on the other side of the important soul contract.
And awareness of that can change everything.
Oh, you got them all kind of doors, because you could take 20 lifetimes of progress in one lifetime.
That's right.
If you're aware of yourself, so that you don't have to bother playing stuff out until somebody's dead.
Right. Well, if we understand that, then we know that there's a completion. If I create you to hurt me, there are a lot of ways we can work that through. There are a lot of third options
about that.
Without having it be a tit for tat.
I could forgive you instead of killing you.
Exactly.
Or ask you to forgive me instead of you killing me.
Exactly. So anyway, so this karmic thing is really important. And it's the basis, I think, you know, of so many religions, and certainly my philosophy, your philosophy. And in the old pagan days, the white witches, the shamans would say threefold often. If you put out energy, you're going to get it back threefold. Now, that sounded really dangerous to a lot of people back in the day.
If it was positive and it had to do with the lottery, you wouldn't mind that.
Well,
no,
that's not. Usually when we think about karma, I'm glad you said that, because we usually think about problematic karma. And I would say to a, just the other day.
Karma's neutral too.
Exactly. So I had a young man that we work with who I just adore. He's a police officer. And he spent a lot of time, he's a new cop on the beat, and, you know, last year he made sure a family had a Christmas, and he made sure of that. He went everywhere and got a cop car full.
I remember that.
Remember that incident? And then one day he comes and talks about this young teenage kid that looked really scrawny, and he took him to McDonald's, and he developed a relationship with him, right?
Yep.
Okay, so just recently he's chasing down a woman in a car, you know, with four children in the car. She's going 80 miles an hour and crashes the car. Luckily, no one's hurt. She's in a black neighborhood. She's there, and she's fighting the cop. She's fighting this man, and the kids are running around, and it's crazy. And he sees four young black men walking toward him. Now, I just get a chill when I say this. He expects there's going to be hell to pay. He's all alone. He's a white cop in this neighborhood, right?
Yeah.
Well, guess what? Not only did they testify and witness for him, they helped him in that situation, all four of those young men.
Yeah.
And he said, I don't know how that happened. I said, you don't? Look at what you've been doing over the last 2 years on your beat. That's positive karma.
Well, there's an example of what you put out comes back.
Exactly. I mean, it was an amazing event for him.
Yeah.
And for us to hear that. And he is a wonderful cop. He pays it forward all the time.
Yes.
He pays our work forward all the time.
He does.
Yes, he does. Okay, so how about the next one?
The next one is called the law of effort. Energy flows only when an effort is made. This is the law of out-breathing.
Mm-hmm. This has also been called the law of affirmations. And I started out in this work in the 60s and 70s. And back then, it was always about do something for 24 days and it's going to happen. And then we do affirmations and there's a law of attraction and all of these things that sounded so wonderful, but usually didn't work really, really well.
Right.
So, yes, this is a true thing. Yes, we need to take an action. If we don't do actions, we don't create serendipity. You know, the universe moves when we do. So it's really important. But it's not the end-all, be-all of the energetic laws.
No, it's not. And I've got an angle and an example about effort here that I think you're going to love. It has to do with baseball.
Oh, of course. That's my thing.
You love baseball.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So there's a pitcher and a catcher in a baseball game. And they are, in fact, the motor which drives the entire game. Everybody else in the game is dependent on what the pitcher and the catcher are doing with each other all nine innings, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if we just isolate out those two players, who's taking action first, the pitcher or the catcher?
The catcher.
Right. He's indicating a sign to the guy, right? Okay.
Right.
So he takes an informational action. Then you have the pitcher choosing one of those actions acknowledging it, and then he takes the gross first action of the game, right?
Okay. Right.
So the pitcher's on the receiving end of the action most of the time. Like once he gives a signal and the pitcher agrees to it, it's really up to the pitcher about what happens next.
Right.
And the catcher's got to adjust to what comes at him, which is his job, to not let the ball go.
Because oftentimes the pitcher doesn't agree with the sign that's given.
Right.
Right.
So the pitcher spends a lot of time, so the catcher spends a lot of time not being happy about what's coming at him. Get it?
Yep.
Okay, because he's in the passive phase at that point.
Right, that's true.
And the pitcher's the one who's taking action.
Right.
Okay, so it always pays to be the one taking action.
Well, that's a very good analogy. I like that, Michael. Yes, it always is. And, you know, I'm not diminishing that, you know, being, like going into the next one, having attention and concentrated attention on being able, you know, to do something.
So, are we in the next one?
Yeah, I think we just segued right into there.
Okay, so the law of concentration, concentrated attention says, when a thought or an idea is focused on, it tends to manifestation. This is the basis of affirmation.
Right. And I'm not saying that's not true. I'm just saying that there are times that people believe that that's all they have to do. And then we get down to the next law.
Well, it's a three-legged stool here.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of how affirmations work, in terms of how they manifest in the
world.
Which
we will talk a lot about later on.
The mental one is the one here. This is the leg that has to do with the mind.
Exactly.
So, yes, if you focus on a thought repetitively, it tends to want to manifest into reality. That's a correct statement.
And that's where
most of the affirmational books in the 80s landed and stuck. They just concentrated
on the
mental part.
Yep.
And what they didn't do was pay attention to the emotional part and the action part.
And the spiritual part.
That would be a four-legged stool.
Okay. Right. Okay, so here we go with the next one, which is the big one.
The law of reverse effect.
Yep.
When you want to accomplish a goal intellectually, but your emotions feel it will not succeed, the harder you try, the more impossible it becomes. This is why affirmations without understanding the core emotions do not work.
Boy.
Because emotions trump thinking every time.
Single time. And this is the basis of our work.
Yes, this is a huge basis of our work, helping people get in touch with the emotional part of what they're doing and helping them sort out the contaminated from the natural emotions.
And then
all the beliefs is tied into that and unwinding that whole ball.
And all the karmic stuff that comes up and the soul contracts that
come up. Everything comes out of that.
And I think the real truth is we've all been trained, certainly in my generation, that you go to school, you get good grades, and it's about what you think. It's how intelligent you are.
Yes.
Very rarely have I remembered anyone saying, well, how do you feel about that, Linda? I never heard that in school.
That's correct.
Even in my college work or my master's work, we never talked about that.
Right.
We talked about rational therapy or rational this or rational that, which is actually a misnomer. You know, rationality is the integration of emotion and intellect, not just one or the other.
Well, today in psychology, mostly from my perspective and my opinion, it's all focused on the mental.
It's mental.
The cognitive understanding of ourselves, our behavior. We're controlling emotions with medication now. We don't talk people out of their emotions. We drug people out of their emotions primarily. And there is nothing about intention or spirituality involved in that work at all.
No. And you know what we've seen for real change is what Carl Jung would call rational. He said there's the integration and the understanding that both filters, the intellectual and the emotional filters, create rationality.
Well, that's a part of what made him weird in his time, because he was writing that theory, he called it, back in the 30s, 40s. Mm-hmm. And currently today, we actually believe that thinking, what we think, our words, our ideas, the stuff that comes out of our head, is a rational process.
Right.
And our sensing is a rational process, which is about measuring the world. And what Jung said was, no, that was wrong. That's really not how it works. It works that thinking and feeling, our head and our heart, are the rational processors. And sensing, which is how our body connects to the world, and
intuition
are irrational, which means that they're informational channels, which may be gold or junk, It can be a mixed bag.
Right.
And that you need to sort out that information with one or more of the rational processes, so thinking or feeling. And, of course, we completely ignore feeling as a part of how we evaluate things currently.
Right. Well, I know with all the years we've been in practice, this is the one thing that has really helped our clients the most, being able to get in touch with their emotions, understand them, use them, and create a rational life.
I would agree.
With mind, body, and then soul. Yes. Pieces.
You have to have your head and your heart involved to wholly determine what anything really means to you.
And to create positive energy.
And to create positive energy.
But there are a lot of us, you know, that say that we want to do X, and we put a lot of intellectual energy into doing X, and we're not sure, like, why is X not working, and we've done all this work to get there.
Right.
And so we can push that rock uphill, but it really is pushing a rock uphill. If we add the emotional piece to it, we go to the next law, which is?
The law of dominant effect?
Yeah, you got it.
Have we done the reverse effect?
We just did the reverse
effect. Okay, thank you. I lost track of myself there. Law of dominant effect says that when a thought or an idea is linked with an emotion, it will surmount and supersede any other simultaneous suggestions.
Which is exactly what we were talking about.
Right. When the head and the heart comes together, something will show up in the world.
That's right.
Especially if they're in agreement, they support each other. Now, if they're at odds with each other, if you think one thing and you feel scared about it, that's not in harmony.
Then it goes back to the law of reverse effect again.
If you're mad, that's not in harmony. If you're sad, that's not in harmony. If you're scared, that's not in harmony with the thought. So the feeling will dominate how things tend to manifest, not the thought.
Right. And so if we want to use the law of dominant effect, we're going to have to evaluate our emotions as they align with what the thoughts are.
Yes.
So that creates another way for people to really get in touch with their emotional life. And one of the carrots that we wave is saying, you want to make your life work,
right.
You want to do this, then let's take a look at your feelings and how they either accentuate or not.
That's right. And I've spent the last 40 years of my work life helping people connect to their heart centers, get in touch with their heart centers, and therefore being able to access their emotions and know what they're feeling so that they begin to sort all that out.
Absolutely. Okay. I remember years ago I worked with some therapists. They've asked me to come in on their caseload and whatever. And as a matter of fact, I don't know how many of our listeners know that Carl Jung was an astrologer. And a lot of the filters and a lot of his processes that he put forward, because he was a smart little rat. He didn't mention he was doing it mystically. He didn't mention he was doing it astrologically. He created a system. Well, the system comes right out of the chart.
Do you mean he wasn't completely original in his ideas?
No.
Do you mean he was actually taking astrological, historical knowledge and wisdom and translating it into psychological terms?
That's what he did.
Huh.
And I had one of my students, clients, that said she was really into the Myers-Briggs, and she taught the Myers-Briggs, and she came to me, and something came up about the Myers-Briggs test, which probably everybody's taken. And I said, well, you do know you were taking an astrology test, don't you? And she said, what do you mean? No, that's a Jungian test. And I said, uh-huh, that's my point. And I explained it to her, and she became an intern because she wanted to go to the source, which I always thought was really funny.
Exactly.
Because the bottom line is, Carl Jung saw astrology as his source on so many different levels. He never did a chart for a client.
Yeah.
Especially the ones difficult, he said.
But don't tell anybody.
Yeah. So those people out there that, you know, love Carl Jung but not sure about how they feel about astrology, you might want to take a look at some of the letters he wrote. One of his last letters to Freud was, if I had my life to do over again, I'd be a mystic.
Yeah, instead of a psychologist.
Instead of a psychiatrist. Yeah. Right. Okay. Okay, so those are the laws, the seven, I call them magical laws, of how do we create positive energy. And putting those into effect in our life is amazing, especially the ones that we spent the most time on.
Yeah, I agree.
So if you want more information about that, I mean, certainly going to the source. Go to Revelation. If you can find it, it's been out of print forever. But Revelation by David Spangler, it's a beautiful book. It's very, very well done, and it brings up these laws. And we talk about it more in Discovering Your Soul Mission, New Rules for a New Age also. Okay, so all that being said, those are the basic foundational pieces. And for the last, you know, three, well, this is our fourth podcast. And I've had people say, well, so what? that's great. It was interesting. How do I make it work? What can it work in my day-by life? Some of the energetic laws we just mentioned, of course, can work in their day-by-day life. But most people don't have a system in order to make that work or to be conscious and aware. So
I bet you came up with one.
I did. I actually did. I call it bi-level conversations.
Bi-level conversations.
Bi-level conversations. A bi-level conversation, and Michael's going to run it through you in a few minutes, really is a technique that applies to our day-by-day life, and it applies to the three-legged stool of mind, body, soul. So in the bi-level, we're talking about how we think, how we feel, what's serendipity, what does our soul mean? I mean, all these pieces, we're actually journaling when an experience occurs. And normally, I have my clients do this when they're in the midst of a real challenging situation. So immediately, as they run the system, they're starting to get clarity, and they're starting to get in touch with their feelings, or they're really seeing, oh my God, my soul wanted me to do this, and I did that. You know, so it becomes, in some ways, a way to be a bit detached from all the crap that's going on outside of them, and finding ways to make sense of it. To find meaning in it, find truth, the things we've talked about.
Yeah.
So I would say my interns, when they started working with me, they would have to do one a week, mm-hmm. one by level. And as soon as you get to a point where you don't need to write it down anymore, you're there. Because immediately something happens and I will go, so what am I thinking? What am I feeling? What's my soul want me to do? What's the serendipity of this? Blah, blah. All of it's going on in my head.
Right.
In the midst of anything. Now, sometimes if I'm really emotionally charged by it, like I can be, it may take me an hour or so, maybe sometimes a day, to say, I better go back and do a bi-level conversation on that because I'm not putting all this together.
Right.
So this is one of the best things I've ever given a person is this ability to journal in this particular way.
And the easiest way to engage with this in your daily life, I found from the teachings of my guru, who happens to be my wife and my partner over the years, is to always keep in mind the North Node, your soul mission or path that you're here on to accomplish in this lifetime. So for me, it's Pisces. Anytime I need to get to a bi-level conversation about whatever's happening in my face, in my life, that I'm struggling with, I go to that part that has to do with my North Node. Like, what does it mean to be a Pisces in this lifetime for me, which is my North Node, in this context? And that gets me, that always taps me into the spiritual leg of the conversation about what's going on.
And as you're speaking about that, we were going to set up the inner child for the next 2 months. Uh-huh. But I'm thinking as we're talking that many of our listeners may not know that. They may not understand what their North Node is. They may not understand what's important about their North Node. And yet, in this context, it's really vital. So I think our next... I'm changing it as we speak. I think... I do that a lot.
You're in charge. You can do that.
I can do that. I think our next podcast really is going to be about that. It's going to be about the South Node, North Node. It's going to be about teaching people how to find their soul's mission. A lot of our listeners have been through a lot with us, and they're interns or graduates. They have clients of their own. But some people may not be. And I'm thinking, as soon as you brought that up, I went, you know, I don't want to bring up something and then not explain it. I am a teacher by
so
teacher.
We'll hammer the North Node next.
We'll hammer the North Node
the soul
next.
Soul mission.
Right. Yes, we will. Do you want to go through this list? With I don't know how we're doing on time.
Well, I would like to give an example out of my own life about this. Okay.
I know you like doing that, Mike.
I do love that. I love talking about myself. Naturally, I don't, but okay. When you and I, this is goes back to the 80s. So when you and I got together the first 5 or 6 years, I was still working in the world of psychology and psychiatry. And at the master's degree level in the 80s, when HMOs started to take over the healthcare industry and turn it into a business instead of a healthcare industry.
But no judgment there.
But no judgment there. No, I mean, I could be wrong, but I'm not. You were telling me for the first time in my life that my North Node is in Pisces in the fourth house, and that means, among other things, that I would be better served in my life and happier if I worked out of my home. And I'm thinking, you're crazy, because I work in hospitals and institutions and outpatient practices, and I love my work, and I love what I'm doing, and yada, yada, yada. And you're telling me this thing that doesn't make any sense to me. Okay. And then the insurance industry colluded on me and said, either go back and get a PhD or you're going to get economically squeezed out of your work market at the master's level back then. I won't go into the weeds with all that, but that was the pressure. And at the same time, I'm getting dissatisfied and burned out with the way that healthcare is practiced in psychology and psychiatry by the mid to the late 80s. And there's this push-pull, like, I need to make money. It's harder and harder to make money. You're telling me I should come completely over to the dark side, our practice. And that would make me practice out of my home, not an office kind of thing. And I'm being almost like dragged against my will, if you will, over the like 3 or 4 years that evolved, okay? And you keep telling me the other side of the coin here. It's like, no, it's okay. Don't get a doctorate degree, because even if you get the doctorate degree, you know, you aren't going to be happy by the time you get done, yada, yada, right? So eventually I took your advice, begrudgingly, screaming and kicking half the time, but and pushed by the world, if you will, in that direction. And when I finally landed completely out of the practice of psychology and psychiatry and into the holistic field with you, it didn't take more than a year, maybe, until I was really sitting in my office having talked to a client instead of a patient then. Mm-hmm. And they left, and I sat there in the space and went, huh, this is much more satisfying and much more gratifying than anything I was doing before I came over to the dark side, so to speak. So when I looked back at that, what I could see was that my personality, my South Node, and some other things in my chart, but my personality trusted that what I was doing, what I knew, was the right thing. And this weird dark side thing you were talking to me about, well, it couldn't be right, it's not what I've thought about, it's not what I've decided, it's not what I've chosen. I know what's good. Well, I learned that I don't know what's good for me, that my soul knows what's good for me more than my personality does. And that was a journey of 4 or 5 years of surrendering in that fight with myself to my soul versus my South Node and my personality. And as I went through that process, progressively, I started to look at this in a bi-level conversation with myself. I had my personality saying, yeah, but I like to work with adolescents, and I like the fact that I get in the car and I drive to and from work every day instead of always being on the job. But, huh, I mean, I had a million things I would say to myself that was pro and con kind of thing. And that was my personality arguing for, no, don't go there, stay here.
So if you're putting that into this format, you had a situation, mm-hmm. and then you started thinking about the situation, mm-hmm. and then you started feeling about the situation.
That's right. And the feelings up front were, no, I don't want to. So I was pissed off, or I was scared.
You were angry a lot about that.
I was.
Yeah. Oh. All right. Then the next thing is, so why did your soul create it? Now, you're very clear about why your soul created it. Right. It want you to do your North Node in the fourth house.
Hindsight's the clearest.
Okay. And the next piece of this is, what am I learning from the experience? And what did you learn from that whole experience that your soul knew best?
Well, my North Node is in Pisces in the fourth house. That could be rolled down. I came here to develop my spiritual foundations.
Right.
So what does that have to do with me as a counselor or a healer or a past life regressionist or a holistic coach? Everything. Because I'm helping other people do exactly the same thing, or am I not?
That's right. And you're learning from them what you need to be doing, right, which is the way good teaching is, right?
So what I learned along the way was that the work that I love doing is first and foremost about for myself in the first place, which is not the way I ever held it in my life up front, because I was a good Boy Scout, a good doobie, a good Christian, call it whatever you will, right?
Okay. Right.
Everybody else first, you know, before me kind of thing.
Okay. Okay. And so you figured out the potential serendipity. That's the next piece here. That your life started to work and you were happier, I assume.
Yes. Less effort. Greater gratification, greater satisfaction.
More freedom.
Oh, God, the freedom.
The freedom, yes, I know.
Okay, because in the work in the straight field, it was like, you know, walls closing in year after year after year after year to where at some point I wouldn't be able to move
That's right.
on my own.
Okay. And the last one is, how does this situation help me achieve my soul mission? You talked about that.
Yes.
Okay. So for our listeners, this is what I'm going to put into the context of this report. So what I would suggest you all do is create a journal, and you're going to have different sections in the journal. The first one is you're going to write down the situation, whatever's going on in your life. Then you're going to think about the situation. And then you're going to go beyond the thinking part, and you're going to go to, so what am I feeling? Mad, glad, sad, scared, ashamed. All right, then you're going to write about that. The next thing you're going to do, once you understand what your soul mission is, which we'll do next week, is why did my soul create this? Why is my soul putting me on this path, not another path? Okay. What am I learning from this experience is the next category. And we're learning a great deal all the time if we do this kind of a system. The serendipity. What is the serendipity here? For me, learning about serendipity was singularly one of the most important things I ever learned. Because when we know serendipity is true, there are no more mistakes.
Right.
Okay. And we probably need to do a podcast on serendipity too. There's so many podcasts
up
we need
the road,
to do.
Yeah.
Up the road, right. Okay. So finding out the serendipity. Like, this is an action I took. My soul took this action. I'm going to trust that my soul knew best. Therefore, serendipity is alive and well.
Right.
And the final thing on the little journal is, how does the situation help me achieve my soul's mission? And that's a journal. You know, it's a different kind of journal than most people have, but it's my journal. And it's a way that most people can really get in touch, you know, with very challenging situations.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And what I've said to my clients and I've done myself is I've gone back in my life and found a really difficult situation, let's say.
Right.
And gone back and done a bi-level conversation about that situation that occurred 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
And so now I have a new take on it. A
right.
bigger take,
right.
more of an understanding. So it's never about, well, that person screwed me over, or I had a bad time,
that's
or
right.
blah, blah, blah. It's always positive.
It always comes out positive.
It always comes out positive.
When you get to a place where you look back on something that's behind you, you can see what the product of it was, of the struggle, of the conflict, of the,
right.
of the stuff hitting the fan in your life, so to speak, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't ever looked back on anything I thought was a bad thing that happened to you along the way and didn't have a positive outcome.
Right. And how many people that we see day by day who feel regret?
Oh, yeah.
And so this whole process, and especially the serendipitous part of that, takes regret away.
Oh, it absolutely does. You cannot believe that things in your past damaged you. You can believe that things were traumatic, that they were hurtful, that there was pain involved, that there was struggle. But you don't believe in being permanently damaged by
right.
what happens to you
right.
if you believe in serendipity.
And one of the basis, well, I think the base word of serendipity is serenity, right?
Yeah.
Serene, serenity. So serenity really is feeling at peace and feeling in grace and feeling in center. And those things have occurred in my life. Because I believe in serendipity.
Right.
Now, the other thing
that's true for me too,
right, is that there is an inherent need to in belief in our soul.
I think that's critical and important. Too.
Right. So that's why. Right.
And my South Node in Virgo did not want to go there.
No.
Early in my life.
So that is definitely what we're going to do in our next podcast. We're going to look at the soul mission. And South Node, North Nodes, and all those, and why they're so important, especially as we look at what we've just done.
Okie dokie.
And then after that, we will start working on the inner child. How's that?
Sounds like you're planning out the next two podcasts this week.
I'm thinking about actually the next eight.
Okay.
You know, in 2 months on the inner child, and one month on the North Node, South Node, and then of course we'll talk about serendipity.
Okay.
There is a book out there, folks, called The World of Serendipity. By Marcus Bach, that is amazing. You can get it from Amazon. It's a little book.
It's not long.
You can go on there. You get the book, and there's a chapter in there called "Never on Broadway" that will blow your socks off. So I'm not going to tell you what it is. Go and read it. I'm giving you a teaser here. So once again, your feedback is always welcome and important. And next week, this time, we will be talking about your soul mission. So see you next week.